Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. Today, my guests are the three candidates vying for the Democratic Party line for mayor of Syracuse. The primary election will be held September 10th. Joining me are the incumbent mayor, Stephanie Miner, city councilor, Pat Hogan, and Alfonso Davis, an independent insurance agent. This will be a two-part conversation to be aired today and again next week. Today, we will focus our discussion on the political process as it relates to being mayor. Next week, we will focus the discussion on specific policies affecting the city. Mayor Miner, Councilor Hogan, Mr. Davis, welcome to the program, and thanks for being willing to engage with each other on this format.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Miner, I'd like to start with you. Your two challengers have framed a large part of their campaigns on criticisms of the way you've interacted with the city council. So how would you characterize your overall leadership style and more specifically your working relationship with the council over the past year? Has it been productive for the city's governance?
Well, you know, I have a very good relationship with a number of councilors, and others has been very difficult. You know, there is a natural tension built into the division of government between a legislative and an executive branch. And what adds to that tension is that we have a lot of very tough and hard choices that we have to make as a government to move forward. And unfortunately, this council, the majority of this council, has chosen to be obstinate and drag their feet and not want to make those tough decisions, whether it's been delaying a vote on the land bank, whether it's been politicizing the planning commission, whether it's been voting to take away resources from Chief Fowler. They have over and over again decided that they would rather opt with the status quo than change. And the status quo hasn't been working for Syracuse. It won't work in the future. And when I ran for office 4 years ago, I said I was going to move the city forward and leave the status quo behind. And I'm proud to say, with economic development, more cranes in the air, Say Yes flourishing, the president coming to town this week, and more innovative technology that we're using every day, we've seen that happen. We are really a city on the move.
If you had a do-over in your first term so far, is there anything you would have done differently in the way that you've worked with the city council?
Well, you know, I think part of what makes this job so interesting is that every day you can think about things that you would have done differently. But I'm proud of the track record. I'm proud of the accomplishments that we have had. And those accomplishments are tangible. You can see the economic development that's going on throughout our city. You can see the kind of changes that we have had with revolutionizing education. You can see where we have embraced technology and really moved our city forward to a 21st century. So I'm sure that there are, and in fact, I know there are certain things that I would change, but overall, I'm very proud of the record, and I think the record stands for itself.
Councilor Hogan, why are the problems that you've identified in your campaign with this relationship between the mayor and the city council, why are they the fault of the incumbent mayor and not of a set of city councilors, as the mayor seems to have just suggested?
Well, as a city councilor, you know, you respect the best wishes of your constituents. You know, the mayor mentioned some of the problems she's had with the city council, but of course, we've collaborated on issues with her, especially the senior membership. I'm chair of the airport authority, our airport committee, and we pushed through the airport authority. You know, that started under Mayor Driscoll, and I carried it through when the mayor was on the city council, and now, you know, I've worked with her on that. There are issues that I feel strongly about, particularly quality of life issues. When she talks about the police department, for instance, the only resources I can remember ever challenging that the current police chief has is this take-home cars, the 47 take-home cars that go home with senior officers, you know, that cost the city quite a bit of money. So I'm a little puzzled by there are certain issues that we've, you know, that we've collaborated on. And there's other issues we've, you know, we felt strongly about and we fought about.
And Mr. Davis, I'll come back to you in a minute. But Mayor Miner, on this issue then of the police resources, is there something else that you had in mind?
Sure. In a budget vote in 2010-2011, Councilor Hogan voted to take away $800,000 from the police department, in addition to voting to take away cars from police officers, which are a needed resource. Let me just add one other thing. As he talks about the airport authority, on the city council's agenda has been key vital pieces of airport authority legislation that has just been sitting there for weeks and weeks, if not months. And if he says he wants to move the airport authority forward, he can start by acting on that.
Mr. Davis, you're being very patient, but quickly, Councilor Hogan, on the response to this, and then I'll go to you.
Well, we're dealing with the airport authority that's already formed, and we're also dealing with the mayor's office. Now, certain pieces of that legislation were forwarded to us. We are under the assumption that everybody, all the parties involved, were informed about it, particularly the unions, and we found out to our chagrin that they weren't involved in the decision making. So we have 102 city employees out there that are going to be deeply affected by this airport authority transfer. And I want to make sure everybody's on board with it. And I'm holding the legislation until we can bring all the parties to the table. And as far as the confrontational, you know, aspect, Grant, you bring up, you know, the mayor, we're not unique, the Common Council. The mayor has fought with the governor and, of course, the district attorney, too. So, I mean, there's a confrontational style that's apparent in her administration.
Mr. Davis, how would you handle a situation in which you deeply disagreed with your city council on an issue of critical importance to the city? How would you go about it?
Well, for me, and I just listened to this conversation, as they were articulating their thoughts, the first thing I thought of, because you held the conversation between Stephanie and Pat Hogan, and then you finally engaged me into the conversation, to me, it's sort of like the same old adage that, okay, this race is between these two individuals, and then I come in, you know. So first, that was my first thought. But to Stephanie's point about cranes in the air and the council holding back projects to move forward, to get the city to move forward, those cranes in the air aren't from her administration. Those are from previous administrations. The airport is not from her administration. That's from, again, a previous administration. So when she speaks about these are the revolutionary things that she's doing to move the city forward, they're based on somebody else's mission and plan that they've already put forward. She's just riding on the coattail of that. That's one. Secondly, when you look at the city of Syracuse and how we've been moving thus far under her administration, we have not been moving effectively. If you talk about job creation, where's the job creation? If there's cranes in the air, where's the job creation? That ties right into the issue of crime in our city. You know, there's a lack of jobs within the community. Certain communities have been neglected, forgotten, and never even thought about under her administration. Because if you look, yeah, she's put paint on some areas in the south side of the city of Syracuse. Same thing with the west side and the lower north. But the majority of those communities have been neglected by this administration.
Well, let me follow up with you about the question, though, of leadership style, because that's what we're going back and forth on here. So tell me how you as mayor would deal with a city council where there was conflict between the two.
Well, the difference between leadership style is respecting individuals. You have to respect those individuals who were elected to office. Stephanie made a comment that the counselors didn't know because they were part-time and she's full-time. That's a disrespect to those people who were elected just like she was elected. So you cannot engage individuals but then disrespect the importance of their role as a council person by saying that they're part-time and they have no knowledge or they don't know. So you have to consistently engage in a way that is going to be or that will allow you to be a positive person, lead from a positive perspective, engage individuals where they are, and respect the fact that they are elected officials just like you, and attempt to come to some resolutions that you can agree to disagree to move the city forward and have common ground. But when you come with this perspective that it's you and you're the head honcho and everything stops with you, you're not going to get a positive response from individuals who have their own perspectives and their own personalities. You're just not. And that ties right into what New York Times called the pugnacious. And B. Gonzalez said that she was a difficult person to deal with. And Van Robinson, who's supporting her now, but said the same thing. Same thing with Joe Nicoletti. Every individual who has dealt with her over the past 8 or 9 years that she served on the council all said the same thing. And now her administration has brought that to fruition even more because she's now the mayor of the city of Syracuse.
I'm Grant Reher. I'm speaking with Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, City Councilor Pat Hogan, and Alfonso Davis. They're the candidates for mayor in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Mayor Miner, let me turn back to you, and let me just put this question directly to you because this issue with the governor has been invoked. The public disagreements between you and the governor over the city's finances are well known. At this point, why do you think you're still the best Democrat to be the public advocate to the state capitol on behalf of the city?
Well, look, the people of Syracuse expect their leaderships to speak truthfully and honestly. It is no secret I'm not a fan of our Albany's pension borrowing schemes, and I'm also not a fan of them cutting state aid and leaving the burden with us. And I'm going to speak to that and let the people of the city decide who's speaking the truth about these issues and what they need to know. The reality is I prefer calm seas. I prefer allies like Joni Mahoney, like John DeFrancisco. But I prefer the interests of the city of Syracuse even more than that. And the people of the city of Syracuse in times like this in particular need to understand the importance of these things and how we can get ourselves out of this. And part of that is by being honest about the facts.
Councillor Hogan, I want to come back to you because you invoked this originally. When the mayor was a councillor, she stood up to a powerful developer, and she was widely criticized at the time, but is now widely admired for her courage and her foresight there. Why is this case with the governor, again, that you brought up, why is that not, too, a case of strong leadership?
Well, you know, let's get the history straight here. The mayor voted for the original Destiny plan. You know, there was a 9-0 vote. I wasn't on the council then. So she's changed, you know, she changed her position later on in her council tenure. The governor, you know, for instance, it's like picking your spots. The governor came up with a great idea about capping arbitration awards to police and fire. It was a 2% cap he wanted to push through the assembly. The mayor picks a fight with him about the pension smoothing plan that he puts forward, but never mentions the pension cap. He never mentions our city assembly people who represent our city and our state senator, who are Democrats, who basically, you know, are allied with her, never mentions to say, why don't you carry the ball? Why, this is what we need. We would love a 2% arbitration cap. There was just complete silence on that. And that's just one of the ways, you know. When the governor came out with his pension smoothing plan, it was 10 seconds later she criticized it. I hadn't even seen it. You know, I said, let's look at this before we start criticizing things that are coming out of Albany. You know, I mean, our relationship with the governor is very important. And, you know, I did a lot of team building and collaboration when I was with the Parks Department, with park associations and things like that. Also, I was fortunate enough to serve in the city school district. And for 8 years on the council, I've listened to my constituents. And I've done a lot of things in the neighborhoods. And, you know, when we're talking about these issues, the folks out in my constituents are well aware of how I represent them.
Mr. Davis, you've also voiced criticisms of the way the mayor has spoken publicly about the city's fiscal challenges, and you've said that you would try to persuade the governor to increase funding that he has said pretty clearly he's not going to increase. So what's going to be your secret here? How are you going to change this? The governor doesn't seem to be a guy who's easily persuaded.
I can understand that, well, particularly coming from the mayor's perspective, because he doesn't like the way that she has dealt with that whole issue when it came to the smoothing plan. So, and the contentious relationship that she's established with him. So he's not interested in really brokering any conversation that's going to really bring any relief to the city of Syracuse. Right now, we get 2% of revenue share. We really should be getting 8%. And so for me, broken the conversation with the governor to talk about moving the city forward in terms of revenue, fair revenue sharing, and giving us, even if we didn't get 8%, that he somehow was able to give us, move it up to 4 to 6%, that will bring some great relief to the city of Syracuse in terms of economically where we currently stand. And then the other piece is this. We have a lot of city workers who draw a check from the city of Syracuse every 2 weeks, but put nothing back into the coffer because they don't live in the city. I would like to impose a commuter tax on those
individuals. We're going to come back to that. So let's okay, table that for now.
But that's part of the whole scheme in terms of if we're talking about where the city is going, how the city is going to move forward in establishing a better relationship with our governor, we have to come with something to the table to say that these are some of the things that we would like to put forward. But at the same time, Governor, this is where we need you to chip in. This is where we need you to come in to help us so that we can move forward. I know the governor's not in the business of bailing out cities. He wants to know that you have a plan, a vision to move your city forward, and that all ties into play.
My guests are Alfonso Davis, Syracuse City Councilor Pat Hogan, and Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. They're the candidates for mayor in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Councillor Hogan, by the time this program airs, President Obama will have made his visit to the area. what's the proper role of the federal government in helping cities like Syracuse, and what can a mayor do to advocate for the city on a federal level?
Well, you can advocate with your city congressperson. You know, I mean, politics being the way it is, obviously, you know, Congressman Maffei is a Democrat in the Democratic Party, and the mayor currently leads the Democratic Party here locally, so you can advocate through the federal government. Now, many people aren't aware that, you know, we get $75 million for the city school district from federal grants. You know, we used to, when I first started with the city, President Nixon had an Emergency Employment Act where, believe it or not, over 4% anytime unemployment hit over 4% nationwide, money would flow to the cities. And we haven't seen a program like that in quite some time. And I went to work for the City Parks Department under the Emergency Employment Act, and a lot of kids in my neighborhood on the South Side and the West End went to work for the City Parks Department and maintained that. I think we need something like that from the federal government. I've often said I wish the federal government would stop blowing up things in other countries and build stuff in this country.
Mayor Minor, what approaches have you adopted in this area of trying to work with the federal government?
Well, I've been very active in all areas. First, making sure that we get our fair share of community development block grants, that we utilize all of the grant funding that we can from the federal government. We have over and over again demonstrated to the federal government that we've been innovative in working with HUD and Housing and Urban Development, and also working with groups that advocate change. Most importantly, I think, is the issue of gun control. Gun control is really a federal issue. The overwhelming number of handguns found in our streets are sold in Ohio and Virginia, places that have lax gun laws. So I've been very active with the Mayors Against Illegal Guns, saying that we in New York State have very strict gun control, but we need the federal government to pitch in to help us because there are too many illegal guns on our streets causing violence and mayhem and too much tragedy.
And Mr. Davis, you've said that as mayor, you would do more to involve the poorer neighborhoods into the governance of the city. So what specific ideas do you have to increase the participation of marginalized groups and disadvantaged parts of the city into the city's affairs?
Well, part of that comes from invoking a conversation with our Congressman Dan McFay, who can help us levy some grant programs that will allow dollars to come into the community to create real job programs. I often talk about a comprehensive vocational program that will give young people a skill set to move from the classroom right to the workforce. And part of that is saying that we need to get some federal dollars to help us develop that so that we can really focus on creating real opportunities and real access for our young people in the city of Syracuse. There are no job training programs. There are no real programs that will allow our young people to get trained so that they can go from the classroom to the workforce. I'm 100% in agreement with Say Yes Education. I know Mayor Minor ran on that 4 years ago as if she was a pilot of that program, which she wasn't. She just kind of adopted it and then ran on it as that was going to be the savior of the city of Syracuse. And we look at where we are right now. We still have a very large dropout rate in the city of Syracuse. We still have a lot of young people on the city of streets who are not trained, who don't have any skill set. Under my administration, we will develop a comprehensive vocational program where we could take young people from the classroom right to the workforce, and we can also increase the bonding piece. There's a lot of minority contractors who would like to get contracts, but they are stuck in this piece where they can only get, I think it's like $25,000, and I'd like to raise it to $100,000 before they have to get bonded, because then that gives them an opportunity to hire young people in our community. I respectfully say that this mayor doesn't have the political will to move that forward so that you can really share in revenue in terms of developing and increasing the minority participation to allow young people, not just minorities, but there's a lot of different people and different groups in the city of Syracuse who feel that they are not a part of this process. And so if we do not come to them versus trying to get them to come to us, we will continue to be where we are, and that's why we have this situation where the violence in the city of Syracuse have erupted to where it is, because no one is coming to them. They're busy trying to get them to come up to where they are.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with Syracuse City Councilor Pat Hogan, Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, and Alfonso Davis. They're the candidates for mayor in the upcoming Democratic primary election. And well, this question straddles both process and policy. It's about I-81. Mayor Miner, has the public in this region had a sufficient opportunity to be involved in the deliberation process, and what is the appropriate role of city government in deciding the final outcome?
I think that there has been an open process. I think it needs to continue, and there needs to be – the public needs to be part of this process all the way through. And we have – I specifically have communicated to Commissioner McDonald, the New York State DOT commissioner, that that needs to happen, and she has agreed. I think that I-81 has to come down. It is a physical barrier that separates our city, and in no way will a bigger, shinier I-81 going through our city benefit us. This is a decision that will have generational impact, and as such, the community at large deserves to be sitting at the table. And I think the mayor's position, as with all other things that the mayor does, is to be a representative of her constituents and to make sure that they have a voice and to be an articulate advocate for that.
And Councillor Hogan, do you have a particular option that you're favoring, and do you have any suggestions about what to change in the public involvement part of the process?
Well, I think you have to be a vigorous advocate for the city. I mean, obviously, Route 81, if you look at the history of Route 81, it was opposed by the mayor at that time, Mayor Henniger, I believe, and most of the city council. But it was jammed through, it says Syracuse take it or leave it type situation. I think if they have to rebuild it, they have to be cognizant of the neighborhood surrounding it because it destroyed the old 15th Ward, obviously. Unfortunately, this city has a history of making bad public decisions like this. They built the War Memorial too small. The ballpark, of course, decision was a disaster, and it should have been downtown. So I think as a mayor, you have to be a vigorous advocate, and you have to use all the means at your disposal, including your state delegation, to make sure this is done right.
And Mr. Davis, do you have a position on what ought to be done with this highway?
I just was listening to Mr. Hogan, and when you first asked the question, the first thing I thought about was the 15th Ward. When that I-81 came up, it completely polarized a community that was thriving. In the 15th Ward, you had your own doctors, store operators who was functioning in the city of Syracuse at a very high level. And it was dismantled and destroyed and then dispersed. Those individuals were dispersed throughout the city. And so the power base from that particular community was just gone. And so now we're talking about either doing the same thing again or should we rebuild it? If you don't engage the people and get a perspective of the people in that area in terms of what's best for them, yes, I understand the barrier, but let's look at every major metropolitan city throughout the United States. There's always particular barriers that keep certain people in certain perspectives. They're either railroad tracks or highways, and those are the things that separate individuals.
Well, let me try to pin the two of you down on this, Councillor Hogan and Mr. Davis, because the mayor was quite specific in what she favors, at least what she doesn't favor, which is you want to get rid of the elevated highway.
Correct.
So, Grant, does that mean the mayor, you're in favor of the boulevard?
No, it means I'm in favor of getting rid of the elevated highway and then looking at all options that we have. But that is bar none. We have to do that.
Would the two of you, Mr. Davis and Councillor Hogan, go along with that at least as a starting point?
No. Okay. I'm not in favor of getting away with it, because if you get rid of 81, then you're going to create a bottleneck on 690. So you have to think about that. What, are we going to widen 690? And then you're going to divert all that traffic to 690, and you're going to get rid of 81, and it's going to affect so many different – it's going to affect Auburn. It's going to affect the travel flow of people coming and going into 81 and through 81. So I'm not in favor of getting rid of 81. I think that it's there now, and we have to deal with what's there. Let's take the money to rebuild it, solidly so that good fixture, but also when we do that, let's bring those individuals in those neighborhoods, let's give them some jobs to help rebuild it.
Okay, Councillor Hogan, where are you on this?
Well, first of all, I don't like either of the two options. I believe, why was Syracuse only limited to two options? I think this is where the vigorous advocacy comes in. I think it should either be a recessed highway or it should be underground. Now, I base this on things that have happened in the city. When they built West Street, for instance, they got rid of 140 houses. They destroyed a neighborhood. The 15th Ward was destroyed by Route 81. When they built Edwin Weeks School, that neighborhood was destroyed. So you have to be I don't like the idea we're the third option. I think that's where the advocacy with your state delegation is going to play a telling role here.
And just for the clarity of our listeners, give me a one-sentence definition of recessed highway.
Well, that's what something that goes down and is covered over by a bridge.
Okay. Let's move on. We're talking on Tuesday. It's the 20th that we're talking. And yesterday, Tom Daty, the Onondaga Republican chair, issued a statement that seemed to suggest that the outcome of the Democratic primary would be a factor in its ultimate nominee for mayor, which in turn would suggest, Councilor Hogan, that you're in their plan somewhere. Now, you've said in the Post Standard that you don't know if you'd accept their slot on the ballot. But let me ask you this very specific question about that. Have you had any conversations with Tom Daty on this subject in the last 2 weeks?
I haven't talked to Tom Daty in a long time. I haven't talked to Mr. Keener. I haven't talked to anybody from that hierarchy of the Republican Party. So, I think this all stems because at times I was cross-endorsed by the Republican Party. But right now I'm concentrating on running the Democratic primary.
Okay. And Mayor Miner, I have a question about the campaign process for you on a different topic. We hear constantly about the problems with money in politics, about how it's bad for the political process. And in this campaign, you have an enormous money advantage over your two challengers. So why should this not be a concern for the voters?
Well, because I've supported campaign reform in the past, and my history is that I raise money when I run for office. I'm not a constant fundraiser. It is the least appealing part of the job, but I have to tell you, I'm very gratified because people on their own are donating to my campaign, whether it's $10, $100, or more, and they're saying, look, you are somebody who stands up. You have a proven track record of standing up against developers, developers like Bob Congell who have tried to buy the process and buy the city. You're somebody who's gotten things moving. And we always know where you stand, and you are an advocate for the city of Syracuse, and that's exactly what we need. So I think that, as I've said, I've supported campaign finance reform. It's the worst part of this process, but it is a necessary part in order to get your message out, and I've been very gratified that people have been so generous.
And I want to flip that question around and ask both Mr. Davis and Councilor Hogan. Political scientists often look at the ability to raise funds in order to gauge the competitiveness and the strength of candidates. So, and start with you, Mr. Davis. Why should voters who are less personally familiar with you not infer some lack of traction in your campaign based on the level of fundraising?
Well, I would like to see those $10 donations to Stephanie Miner. I don't think she has many of them.
You can look at the Board of Elections filing and see them, Alfonso.
But as I was saying, I find that funny. It's the grassroots level for me. The grassroots level. I've been a grassroots organizer in this community for over 27 years before Stephanie even came to the city of Syracuse. And that piece, for me, is way larger than the dollar amount that you develop, because at the end of the day, it's the individual voter who goes to the poll on September 10th and select the person who they believe has the leadership skills, the temperament, and the attitude to lead your city in the right direction. So while we have not been able to amass $348,000 to move our campaign in the direction that Mayor Miner has taken her campaign, we've amassed the grassroots level of people. And people power believing that at the same time, you don't need hundreds of thousands of dollars to get your message out. You have to continue to work at the grassroots level, door by door, individual by individual, stakeholders by stakeholders. And that will make the difference when it comes time to moving your campaign forward, when they select me as the next Democratic candidate who will lead the city in the right direction on September 10th.
Councilor Hogan, do you have anything to add to what Mr. Davis said on this issue of the fundraising?
Well, you know, I ran two campaigns against a well-funded incumbent who was supported by the entire Democratic hierarchy. He's outspent me 6-1, and I ended up prevailing. I'm like Mr. Davis. I'm a dedicated door knocker. I probably knocked on 2,500 doors. I have a lot of volunteers. I'm supported by the working class communities that I represent and the working class communities around the city. I have enough money to get my message out.
We're out of time here. One final question I would like to ask you, that you keep your answers to one name, please. Mayor Meyer, we'll start with you. Could you cite a well-known mayor, past or present, that you've been trying to model yourself on as mayor of Syracuse?
Michael Bloomberg.
Okay. And Mr. Davis, who would that be for you?
Wow. Harold Washington.
Okay. And Councillor Hogan.
I'm taking somebody from the other side, Fiorella LaGuardia.
Okay. That was Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, City Councilor Pat Hogan, and Alfonso Davis, candidates for mayor in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Next week, we'll continue this conversation with a focus on specific policies affecting the city. Two reminders, the election is September 10th, and you can find a longer version of this conversation as a downloadable podcast on WRVO.org under the Campbell Conversations tab. Thanks again to the three of you for talking with me.
Thank you.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender and Kelly Coleman, and recording engineer Tom Fazio. For more information on the Campbell Conversations, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.